Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Story number one. Attics have always been the kind of space people pass by with a quick laugh or a nervous look, the place where old things go to die. When I took the job as a live-in housemaid, the family said the attic would be mine. That was the first line in a long list of small things I would later try to explain away. The attic was colder than the rest of the house, like a room kept behind a different season. The light there was thin and yellow, leaking through a single bulb that hummed instead of buzzed. The air smelled of old paper, wood faintly damp. Dust covered the floors and walls when I moved. At first, everything was workable. I kept my chores, fed the children, ironed shirts, stacked plates. I told myself I was lucky to have a roof and pay at the end of the month. That phrase kept me steady for a while. Then the hands came. It was a night that had the kind of stillness which makes sounds too loud. I had woken with my heart thudding and the strange taste of copper in my mouth. My clothes were torn in a way that suggested struggle and also something clumsy. Fabric rifled with fingers that did not care for neatness. The door to the attic was locked from the inside. There were no windows up there, only that thin bulb and the small vent that never really opened. I checked the latch with shaking fingers and found it secure and unbroken. The mattress had impressions like someone had been there and then slid away. It would have been easy to tell myself I had been dreaming. That is the practical explanation everyone prefers. Dreams are safe to hold up and examine, but dreams do not leave that smell on the sheets, the faint smudges of dirt under the nails, or the wetness that tracked from the hems of my dress. They do not leave a scrap of fabric stuck in the teeth of one of the attic nails. There were other things. While the family was out one afternoon and I was alone, washing clothes downstairs, that's when I heard the high, brittle sound of glass breaking. The house went still afterward, as if holding its breath. I hurried to the kitchen to find the biggest cabinet door open and the pile of drinking glasses on the floor, tiny sharp pieces scattered across the tiles. The sound of them had been clear, no mistaking it. I had the broom in my hand before I understood anything, but when I reached, the floor was tidy. Every glass stood in its place on the shelf, dustless, uncracked. For a minute I stood with the broom like a person caught mid-gesture. Sometimes I felt watched. Objects moved from where I left them and then slipped back when I blinked. The night that finished whatever thread of denial I had left was a thunder night. It was raining heavily. I was done with my work and found myself still near the hall when something at the end of it registered as wrong. It was the silhouette of a person standing too still, too quiet. I could not say why I called for someone to come, but only my voice echoed. There was no answer. The figure turned. The face was wrong in a way that made my stomach drop. Skin pulled too tight, eyes too dark. It had a human shape, but it didn't look like one. It moved slow, watching me. I ran. The floor creaked under my weight. I reached the attic stair, and something took my ankles. The tug was sudden and impossible to describe. A cold, thin pressure that tightened like a strap, and then, with the deliberate force, pulled. I did not have time to think. It dragged me backward and down. My screams echoed. The morning after, I found myself a few meters away from the front door. My head throbbed. I pushed myself up, and my body felt too heavy. The attic was not where it had been. In its place was only a plain wall, painted the same color as the corridor. No hatch, no stairs. I stood there with the house breathing around me, my mind still unable to believe what had happened. The family looked at me like I was a psycho when I told them about what happened last night. They said my room was in the staff quarters upstairs. They said I had been sleeping there all along. I resigned that day. In other people's lives, it might have been the end of a strange episode, a sleepwalking, a panic, a vivid dream misremembered. That was the reasonable story I tried to tell myself on the bus as the city blurred past the window. But I kept finding small traces. a thin smear of dirt on the ankle of my dress that could not be explained by any walk I had taken. Once, 3 weeks later, while cleaning another place, I paused because of the sudden sensation of being watched from directly above. I looked up. Nothing, but there was a crack, and for a moment, I think I saw eyes staring at me before they vanished. I tell myself I am being ridiculous. Perhaps the attic was never there. Perhaps I fractured when I slept, and my mind invented a house for me to stay in. Maybe the family really did move things into staff rooms. Maybe the house remembered differently. The thing I cannot talk myself out is that small scrap of fabric I pulled from the nail months ago. I have no reason to keep it, only the obstinate need to hold on to something that says something happened. And sometimes when it rains, I wake to that light, thin and yellow, and the sound of the house settling as if someone heavy has turned in the rafters. I do not know whether the thing that touched me in the attic belongs to the house or to a person who once lived there. I only know that sometimes the world rearranges itself around what has happened, and people rearrange themselves around the story they prefer. The doubt sits like a weight, not heavy enough to crush and not small enough to ignore. The attic, whether real or not, left something in me that does not belong to any explanation I can carry. Story number two. This happened when I was 10 years old, and even all these years later, I still feel a cold sweat every time I remember that night. We lived in a small town where everyone basically knew everyone else, but there was this house, a hulking Victorian mansion with three stories and turrets and dark, heavy curtains. It belonged to Mrs. Herridge, a very wealthy woman. She threw these huge parties all the time, and my parents always talked about how kind and generous she was. I guess I was just a kid, fascinated by the sheer size of that place and the fact that it felt completely out of place on our street, like it had sprouted from another era. When we got an invite to one of her parties, all I could think about was finally seeing inside her house. The night of the party, my mom dressed me up in neat clothes and we walked over. Up close, the mansion looked even bigger, its windows dark like watchful eyes. My mom squeezed my hand, but I felt weirdly floaty, probably just nerves. Inside, the place was crowded. Crystal chandeliers hung from high, shadowy ceilings. The rooms flickered with dim yellow light. Old portraits lined the walls. Every room smelled like old perfume, wine, and something faintly metallic. People laughed and gossiped, but it was obvious to me no one else fully belonged there. The adults all seemed only half comfortable, constantly glancing around. There must have been over 100 people there. Kids were running around with punch and snacks, and so I joined them. After a while, curiosity got the better of me, and I drifted away from the grown-ups. I found a grand staircase that curved downward, toward what must have been the basement. I used to love exploring, so without really thinking, I started down. Halfway down, I stopped. The temperature dropped like I'd entered a fridge. The air got heavy, and an awful stench oozed up from below. It was thicker than anything I'd ever smelled, like raw meat kept too long, mixed with something coppery and sweet that stuck to the back of your throat. I gagged. I still remember thinking maybe there was a dead animal down there, a big rat or something. I padded softly into a hallway, the carpeting muffling my steps. The lights flickered, buzzing with electrical static, and it felt like the gray walls were breathing with me, inhaling and exhaling in time. There was a single door at the end, heavy and carved with strange symbols. A circle, a bloody line, weird abstract runes, or maybe just deep scratches. I gripped the brass knob, but it was locked and ice cold to the touch. As I leaned in, the smell got so much worse. It felt wrong, so I was about to leave when I heard it. The faint, desperate sound of muffled voices. Not one, but several. Groans and snatches of some babbling language, rising and falling, as if someone was singing in agony. My skin prickled. It could have been a TV, I tried to reason, or maybe just plumbing. But the more I listened, the less that made sense. It sounded like real people, shuffling and choking back actual pain, and then a sudden sharp scream knifed through everything, echoing from behind that door. My entire body froze, but just as I was about to bolt up the stairs, the knob in my hand twisted all by itself. The lock clicked open. For a full 4 seconds, I just stood there, sweaty, and numb. I don't remember walking inside, but suddenly I was in that basement room, and the smell hit me like a wave. My mouth flooded with saliva, and I threw up right on the rug. Dim red bulbs dangled from low ceilings, barely illuminating the space. I could make out dark shapes making strange, jerky movements on the other side. I blinked and realized they were people, maybe 6 or 7 of them, chained to iron rings on the wall. Their limbs were raw, bruised, too thin.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
It's Kelly Clarkson here to talk all things Wayfair, the best place to buy furniture, decor, and anything else you can think of to create a home you absolutely love. I know when I shop with Wayfair, I find options for every style, whether I'm feeling boho or farmhouse, modern, traditional, French country. I can find exactly what I need for my home and more. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to make your home way more you.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Their faces all blurred together, mouths stretched in silent screams. One had empty sockets, as if something had clawed out their eyes. Another was missing most of their fingers. On the damp stone floor, I saw bodies, some fully clothed, but slashed open, and some barely more than skeletons. It occurred to me that the stains on the floor might be blood, old and new. I can't honestly say if the people looked at me. My memory's fuzzy there, but I remember a horrible quiet, a sort of scraping hush, and I know something in that room saw me. Suddenly, I heard steps behind me, slow and deliberate. In the dimness, Mrs. Harridge's silhouette took shape in the doorway. Her hair looked too neat for this hellish place, pinned up tight, but her grin had stretched too wide, showing far too many teeth. She gripped a gleaming kitchen knife in her fist, the blade so shiny it shone even in the weak red light. Her eyes, they had gone all white, pupils rolled back, and she started drooling, making wet growls in the back of her throat. For a moment she just stood there, grinning, and then, with a flicker of her wrist, she lunged straight for me, knife raised at throat level. Panic finally took over. I scrambled sideways, my shoes slipping in the filth. I dodged behind a stack of crates, heart beating so hard I thought it would burst. She came closer, her steps making this clacking sound on the stone. She was muttering in a deeper, raspier voice now, almost guttural, like her whole body had changed with her face. I peeked out from behind the crates, just a sliver, enough to see her white eyes scanning the shadows, knife dripping something dark onto her sleeve. Her movements, this is what stuck with me most, weren't quite right. She jerked like each step had to be forced, like her body was a puppet being dragged by invisible strings. Eventually, after what felt like hours but was probably only a moment, she slipped out of the room, knife still gripped tight. The second I thought she might be gone, I bolted back upstairs, nearly falling twice. My legs wouldn't stop shaking. Back in the party, everything was normal. Music, voices, the clink of glasses. No one looked at me twice. I found my mom and whispered that I didn't feel well and wanted to go home. She frowned but grabbed our coats. On the way out, I glanced up at Mrs. Harridge, who was greeting guests at the door. She looked perfectly normal, polite and smiling, hair pinned just so. No blood, no knife. I spent years trying not to think about that night. My parents never really believed my story. They called it a nightmare, the sort of overactive imagination kids have. No police ever showed up at Mrs. Harridge's door that I know of. No missing persons reports. She lived there for a few years after that party, then died suddenly. Heart attack, they said. Sometimes I try to convince myself I really did just see a movie, or dreamt it all up. Maybe I was sleepwalking, or hallucinating from party food, or secretly terrified of that house, and let my brain play tricks. That's what a grown-up mind tells you. But I can still smell that rot sometimes when I pass an old house or see meat left too long in the fridge. I still hear the metallic ring of her knife, the way her eyes went blank and shining. Maybe there's a logical explanation for all of it, but every so often the thought returns in the middle of the night that somewhere in that house, something terrible happened, and I was the only person to see its door swing open. Story number three. My neighbors, Karen and Josh, asked me to house sit for them while they went out of town. They left Friday evening after dropping off some spare keys and instructions. I wasn't doing much that weekend, so I agreed. They mentioned their dog, Frankie, gets really anxious during storms, but since the forecast said clear skies and sunshine, I didn't think much of it. Just food, walks, give him company, and everything would be fine. The first evening was ordinary. Frankie, a golden retriever with more white fur around his eyes than gold, seemed relaxed as I set up in the guest bedroom upstairs. He nosed my knee, hoping for some of the pizza I'd ordered, circled the living room, and flopped down with a groan. I half-watched TV, scrolled on my phone, phoned a friend, nothing weird at all. Everything changed after midnight. I woke to rumbling thunder, loud. Rain lashed at the windows. I sat up, confused. I had checked the weather obsessively just in case, and there hadn't been any mention of a storm. Frankie's bark echoed from somewhere downstairs, agitated, rapid, echoing. My stomach knotted. I got up, still groggy, stumbling down the hallway into pitch blackness, but for the blue flicker of lightning outside. Downstairs, the barking had stopped. Frankie wasn't in the living room, or in the kitchen, or by the back door, or his favorite spot behind the sofa. With each room I checked, my panic rose. The whole house felt wrong, colder, silent after the storm's noise. I checked closets, bathrooms, even opened the pantry to peer in, almost laughing at myself. If he'd gotten out, I reasoned, I'd have heard, scrabbling at the door, something. But there was nothing. No paw prints on the floor, not a sound. The only thing unusual was how strong the scent of wet dog suddenly was, as if he'd been running through rain. But the house was locked. I checked the side yard, too, with a torch. No fur, no footprints. I ran back upstairs, heart beating way too fast. I told myself Frankie would turn up any second. Lock all doors. Blame it on old houses, strange layouts, unfamiliar sounds. When I reached the guest room, he was there, panting, staring intensely at the closet. My heart almost stopped. The closet door straight ahead was open an inch, even though I remembered specifically closing and locking it since it was packed with Karen and Josh's stuff. Frankie's ears were flat. His entire body shook. Lightning flashed. Shadows bloomed. The only thing I could hear was his low, rattling bark. I forced myself to cross the room. Every step took effort. I was hyper-aware of the air feeling wrong, heavy, sticky like before a fever, tinged with coppery metal. I reached for the door. It creaked another inch as if pressed from the inside. I told myself it was the storm's wind through some crack, but the window was closed. Frankie didn't budge, just barked and barked at the darkness inside the closet. The storm began to move away, thunder rolling further, and the house fell silent. Frankie turned, stared at me. I'll never forget his eyes, too bright, reflecting a strange shimmer, as if something was shining inside them. It sent a jolt up my spine. I stepped back, something primal telling me not to get closer. I turned and bolted, feeling ridiculous but unable to stop myself. In the living room, I nearly tripped. The sudden sound of barking behind made me spin. Frankie was behind me again, this time standing stock still, facing the TV, hackles up. The television was off, the screen glossy, reflecting a warped image of the room. And for a heartbeat, I saw another shape there, behind my shoulder. Just a glimmer of a small, pale figure, then nothing. The barking stopped. The room seemed to exhale, as if something had left. Before I could move, the lights flickered, then died completely. Rain battered the glass. I tried my phone's flash and swept it across the room. Frankie was there, yes, but wrong. Too tall, hunched over, a glistening line of saliva stretching from his lower jaws. His mouth yawned wide, and for a split second, it seemed his teeth were elongated, grotesquely large, catching the light, almost cracked yellow. His fur bristled, wrong proportions in the shadows. Then my phone died too. The next instant, all the lights snapped back on, harsh and yellow and ordinary. The house seemed smaller, familiar, not frightening. Frankie lay by the living room, curled, snoring lightly as if nothing had happened. I stood there for a long time, shaking. By morning, the storm had passed. I got coffee, fed Frankie, tried to laugh it off. Must have been a panic attack, bad pizza, tricks of the lightning. I didn't let myself even look at the closet. The next night, hoping to catch up on sleep, I binge-watched reality shows with the sound up. Then I realized Frankie was gone. Again. No noise, no barking, just silence. A thickness pressing on my ears that didn't feel right. Every clock in the house had stopped at a different time. Maybe a power surge, I thought. I switched on every light, checked every room, nothing. When I went upstairs, I found the guest room door ajar. Frankie was there, frantically scratching at the closet. Not barking now, just this whimper that felt like nails in my head. I grabbed the closet handle. Cautiously, I opened it. Inside, it was chaos. Extra sheets, shoes, boxes, and lying on top, a faded Polaroid photo. I picked it up. It showed a little girl, maybe six, grinning on a patch of grass. Next to her, a dog, Frankie maybe, but younger, thinner, and strangely with a collar I'd never seen on him. The background looked like the yard out back, except something about the shadows gave me goosebumps. I wondered if the house had another family long before Karen and Josh, if it was their kid. But then why would the photo be hidden? I left the closet door wide open after that. The rest of the weekend blurred into a repetitive cycle. Frankie would vanish for long stretches, then reappear barking at dark corners, under the basement stairs, the attic hatch, the bathroom mirror. Sometimes I'd catch movement just at the edge of my vision in a reflection. Nothing there when I turned. Worst was Sunday night. Just as I was about to go to bed, I heard little feet skittering above me, right across the ceiling, then nothing for hours. A soft scratching, always coming from just out of sight, no matter where I was. Once I thought I heard a child's giggle when I walked past the coat closet. Monday morning came. Sunlight streamed in, too bright, making my head ache. Everything looked normal. Frankie wagged, happy. Karen and Josh returned later that morning. Frankie licked their hands, pressed close as children do when they come home. I left quickly. When Karen texted later, asking how things went, I just said Frankie had been nervous, but I managed. I never mentioned the storms or the closet or the photo, which I left exactly where I found it. They never asked if I'd seen anything weird. I don't know what I saw or imagined. I could say it was all stress, dogs reading my anxiety, reflections playing tricks, old houses groaning in storms, power flickers. But sometimes, at night in my own place, when I see a shape in the TV screen or my own closet door rattles a bit, I remember that weekend. There's a sense I can't quite shake, a feeling like something looked back at me, and maybe it still does. Story number four. I've always been a light sleeper, the kind who'll jolt awake if a car door slams on the street at 2 a.m. When I got assigned to a new city for work, I found a rental in an old brownstone. Third floor, end of the hallway. It wasn't fancy, peeling paint, thin walls, but it was close to everything, and the rent wasn't extortionate. The guy who showed me the apartment, not the landlord, just the super's teenager, just handed me the keys and left. No big welcome speech, just a warning about not letting the front door slam. First night, I noticed the bedroom window didn't quite line up with the sill. There was a small gap at the bottom and one side. When I closed and latched it, I saw a faint outline where old locks must have been replaced, the wood splintered and painted over. It bugged me a bit, but I figured it was just an old building thing. Still, before bed, I made sure to press the window down hard and click the latch. Within a couple nights, I realized the window kept coming unlatched. Like every morning, I'd wake up and it was cracked open again, even on windless nights. I told myself maybe the counterweights inside the frame were jammed up or slipping, but after a while it kept gnawing at me. The nighttime in that room just felt weird. Even though I always try to see the best in places, I couldn't shake the sense I wasn't really alone. The air seemed chillier near the window, even with the heating on. I'd wake up randomly at 3 or 4 a.m., heart pounding, no sounds except the occasional radiator ping. There was this faint, almost coppery tang in the air, like blood or old pennies. Sometimes I'd see my breath when I woke up, even though it was only September. One night I woke up shivering like the Arctic had blown through the walls. For a second I thought maybe my mom had called me. I could swear I felt someone lean in and whisper right in my ear, so close I could feel the breath brush the little hairs on my neck. Swallowed by panic, I flailed in the sheets, heart blasting off. There was nobody in the room, obviously. Just my own shadow thrown huge across the wall by the streetlight outside. But then I saw it, on the inside of the window, pressed right up against the condensation from my shallow breathing, was a handprint. A full hand, long-fingered, pale where it fogged the glass. My heart hammered as I realized it wasn't a finger-smudgy print, but looked pressed on, detailed enough to see the whorls on the fingertips. I forced myself to think it was just me, maybe sleepwalking, but the palm was so much larger than mine, the fingers stretched at angles. My own hands are short and stubby. This one was, well, it was nothing like mine. And this was the third floor. No balcony, no fire escape, no ledge. The ground outside was way, way down. I inched over, half expecting everything from a jump scare to some hobo suddenly swinging in. But the street was empty, just a dumpster and a thin line of trees. I wiped the glass and checked the latch, tried to convince myself I missed a draft or forgot to lock it. After that, stuff started escalating. I'd wake up to that window every night, sometimes wide open, sometimes just enough for the cold to leach in. The smell would be strong then, old metal, rot, and dirt. It never got easier. Some nights I saw flies gathering near the frame. Other nights my lamp would flicker, even though the bulb was new. But what snapped me were the things that left physical evidence. One morning I was brushing my teeth, and in the half-steam bathroom mirror, I saw a handprint show up behind me. Except it wasn't on the mirror itself at first, but sort of within the fog, red streaks forming at the lines where the hand should be. I wiped the surface, smearing the faint rust red into almost bloody swirls. I tried telling myself it might be lipstick residue or rust from an old razor blade nearby, but the cold dread in my gut wouldn't subside. I checked the window again. As ever, it was open. This time what was different was the windowsill, a fat brown rat, dead, stiff, and curled in the edge. It hadn't been there last night, and I checked obsessively before I went to bed. There was no blood around the rat, just its glassy eyes and a patch of fur missing, as if something had patted or gripped it. After that night, I started taping the window shut before going to sleep, propping my dresser tight against the frame with a pile of old magazines. I covered the window with a thick bedsheet duct-taped around the edges, as if I could shut whatever it was out by brute force. But it kept happening. Every night, there would be a new handprint, sometimes pressed against the glass, sometimes high on the pane, so I had to stand on tiptoe to touch the same spot. Once I found a brown mottled feather wedged inside the closed frame. Another time, three neat parallel scratches appeared on the part of the sill facing inside, where my dresser had stood guard. Sometimes I heard something I couldn't explain, like the soft scrape of nails on glass or the featherlight tap-tapping just as I slipped toward sleep. My phone's audio would sometimes catch faint, gurgling static during the worst nights, recorded while I slept as proof for myself. But there was nothing conclusive. No voices, only shifting shadows and brief, sharp bursts of white noise. I reasoned it could have been interference, or me subconsciously making noises. I stopped sleeping with headphones in. I lasted 6 months there. I never saw any faces at the window, never caught anyone in the act. The super didn't care when I showed him the open window, shrugged and said the wind could be weird up on the third floor. A friend suggested I had mice or birds living in the wall. I thought about cameras but chickened out. Part of me didn't want to see what might turn up. But I kept the prints. I took photos, a fingerprint with impossibly long fingers, a bloody mark in a crude child's drawing of a hand, and once, something that looked almost like a face pressed, cheek and half the nose, into the fog around the window, but too distorted to prove anything. I deleted them before moving out, wanted nothing to do with it. By the time my six-month lease was up, I was sleeping on the couch in the living room, refusing to even step in the bedroom at night. My world was shrinking, ruled by a window I couldn't control. When I finally left, the window was wide open, handprint pressed higher than ever before, as if whatever was outside had almost managed to reach in. I never saw anyone climb those walls. No graffiti, no ladders, nothing but the echoes and stares from pitted brick and peeling paint. I hope whoever rents that room next is a deeper sleeper than me, or at least isn't bothered by the way the light never quite reaches the far corners, by the way the window always finds its way open. I still wake up sometimes, swearing I feel cold air and the faintest brush of someone's fingers against my face, as if some part of that apartment came with me. Maybe it's just nerves or nightmares. I really, really hope so. Story number 5. I've never really believed in the paranormal. Even now, believe feels like the wrong word, because when you lay it all out, there's always a logical explanation. Or there should be, but some things stick in your head, and you know you'll never totally shake the feeling. So I moved into this crumbling two-story rental about 6 months ago. Cheapest place in town for a reason. The back of the living room, well, if you could call it that, it was more like a stretched-out storage space, looked out over a broken playground. This was the kind of old-school lot nobody had cared about in decades. The faded wood was splintered and the slide had rust stains that bled orange down into the snowdrifts. Even in daylight, you'd never call it cheerful. At night, it was just a patch of deeper blackness in a world that had all the color sucked out of it. It started a few days after a heavy snowstorm. The ground had that thick, undisturbed blanket, soft as cake icing, with no animal tracks or tire marks. The night was so quiet, I could hear the ticking of my heat pipes echoing around the empty house. Anyway, I was half watching the snow fall outside when I saw her. A little girl, 5, maybe 4, bundled up in one of those old-fashioned red coats, the kind they sell at thrift stores. She was swinging, tiny boots kicking through the powder. Her movements didn't make sense. Too steady, too measured, almost like she was being pushed, but I could see there was no one behind her. And it was almost 1 a.m. My gut twisted. Everyone knows those true crime stories about lost kids. I threw on my jacket, barely laced up my boots. I'm not going to just watch a child freeze to death out there. I yanked open the door, trudged through the yard, boots biting through the drifts. But as I stepped off my porch, she wasn't there. The swing was moving, pendulum perfect, but no child on it. I followed the only evidence left, tiny sharp depressions in the snow. I followed them until the footprints just stopped, right there in the open, 5 feet from the swing set, not faded out, not buried by more snow, just gone. The rest of the field was smooth, perfect. My footsteps were the only other ones. I told myself the wind could have covered her tracks or she ran off, but the air was dead still, and the only movement was my own breathing, sharp and fogged in the cold. I tried laughing it off, but my laugh just sounded odd, too thin out there. Nothing happened for a day or two. I left the blinds closed, gave myself a break from looking at the old swings. The power in the house kept flickering, maybe from the storm, I told myself. It's a bad neighborhood, old plumbing, drafty seals. That's all. One night, I woke up to the sound of metal screeching. Not a scream, not a crash, but that steady, rusty noise, like steel scraping steel in slow motion. I pulled aside the edge of the curtain, and the swings were moving back and forth, sharp arcs that cut through the darkness. The kind of movement that doesn't fit with wind, no matter how hard you squint. There wasn't the faintest whisper of wind anyway. The big pine outside the window was still as grave markers, snow frozen on every branch. That night, I must have dozed off on the couch, book in my lap. When I woke up, maybe 3 in the morning, my socks were soaked through. I scrambled up and realized there was water all around the base of the couch, pooling out in a dark shape. My first thought was busted pipes again, expecting to see water bursting out from somewhere. I checked under the sink, in the bathroom, pulled back the bath panel. Nothing. Pipes bone dry, no dripping from the ceiling, water just sitting there, for no reason. I mopped it up, cracked a window to let the cold air in, and didn't sleep again that night. After that, I saw her almost every night, always at around the same time. Late, when the world felt thin and brittle, she'd be back at the swings, her form fogged by condensation on the panes. Sometimes she'd just stand beside the slide, head cast down. Or I'd catch the red shape of her coat at the edge of the streetlight, the color too vivid, too certain in the white and gray of winter. Once, I thought I caught her staring up at my window, but her face was lost in the shadows. Those nights bled together, uneasy, not quite panic, but a kind of low, persistent anxiety. I'd sit on my old couch, heartbeat ticking in my throat, listening for that metallic shriek and the ghost thud of boots on snow. Then one night, while the world held its breath under a fresh coat of snow, I saw something else. Just beyond where the orange pool of streetlight ended and the darkness began, shapes flickered. Thin, taller than a person, vague, as if someone was playing with the focus dial on an old TV. I blinked, pressed my forehead to the cold glass, but they didn't resolve into anything. They just skittered at the edge of vision, lost to the night before you could get a real look. It was the next evening that things got worse. I decided to stay up, just to watch, so I wouldn't get caught off guard. The house was silent, just the hum of my fridge and the creak of the radiator. I kept my phone on, scrolling mindlessly to keep myself distracted. It started as a soft, rhythmically spaced knocking. You'd think you could ignore it, convince yourself it was branches or board shifting, but my window faces the empty lot. There's no tree close enough to reach it, and the air was so still, not even a breeze could move a branch. The knocking got louder, sharper, insistent. Adrenaline set my hands tingling. I tried to peer through the window. There was no one there, not even a shadow, just an undisturbed blanket of snow and the swings, dead still. I felt ridiculous, fever shaky, sleep deprived, and skittish. I stepped back, breathing fogging up the glass. Then pain, sudden and cold, exploded on my left wrist. It felt exactly like a small hand, ice cold, closing tight, crushing the blood out of my skin. I yanked back, stumbled, hit the corner of the coffee table. Every nerve in my arm throbbed, claw marks blooming red on my wrist. When I managed to look down, there was nothing, nothing at all gripping me. I looked back at the glass, and there she was, just on the other side of the window, face tilted upwards. Except she didn't have a face, just smooth skin where eyes, nose, and mouth should have been, like wet clay wiped away. I must have blacked out for a second, because then she was just gone. I haven't seen her again since that night. The water comes back sometimes, seeping under the floorboards. The swing set still moves, in total dead air, just after midnight. I keep telling myself it's the sleep deprivation, maybe some stress-induced hallucination, maybe weird plumbing, maybe just nerves because I watched too many late-night horror videos. The bruises on my wrist faded, and I keep the blinds closed now. But sometimes I wake up hearing the rhythmic creak of a swing in perfect stillness, and somehow that feels much worse. It could just be the house or my head. Nothing lasts forever, right? I'm moving out next week, but I bet the swing set keeps moving long after I'm gone. Story number 6. This is the kind of thing I would usually just laugh off if someone else posted it, but I still think about it sometimes, usually at like 2 a.m., when the house creaks and nothing feels right. I don't believe in ghosts or whatever, but this one job still freaks me out, and for what it's worth, I'm just putting it out there. If anyone wants to call it an old house settling, fine by me. I'm really just looking to get it off my chest. I do handyman work, painting, patching plaster, fixing creaky stairs, the usual. This job was an old brownstone manor, kind of tucked off a country road, somewhere between Lansing and nowhere. Some couple from the city had bought it and wanted to restore it to look authentic again, so my company got called in for all the finicky bits. Ornate crown moldings, built-in cabinets, everything creaking, everything ancient. The place looked straight out of a faded Halloween postcard. 3 stories. Big wraparound porch half choked with weeds, maple trees that looked like hands. Place hadn't been lived in for decades, according to the couple, and that seemed about right. One of those houses where the corners felt too dark, even during the day. My partner Bry, who did electrical, kept making Amityville jokes. Even our boss, who's worked on historic houses for 40 years, muttered about bad air in some of the rooms. I'm used to old houses feeling a little off, Funky smells, weird cold spots, unexplained noises. All normal, honestly. I shrugged it off for the first couple days, chalked it up to old floorboards and animal nests in the attic. The first weird thing happened end of week one. I was on my own upstairs, patching cracks in the massive master bedroom. It faced east with one of those big, curving bay windows where you could practically camp out. The sun would streak across the floor, except the glass was kind of spectrum-stained, so everything was weirdly yellow. I noticed some plaster flaking above the window ledge and thought, great. Another stretch of lath messed up from the freeze-thaw. I chipped off a loose piece, and that's when I saw it. Right underneath the fresh crack, this sticky reddish run was trickling down over the drywall. Not a gush, but enough that I watched it bead and start a slow descent. I bent over and instinctively sniffed, and immediately gagged. It was metallic, like nicking your gum at the dentist, but way sharper. For a split second, my mouth filled with spit, thinking, oh God, I'm kneeling in front of a bleeding wall. I wiped it with my sponge, expecting red to smear off. Maybe a dead mouse in there, or rusty pipe water. But the spot just reformed. 2 minutes later, the wall below it was streaked, like an oil painting that cried blood. I was pissed, mostly. I texted Bri to come see, but he was downstairs. When I came back up with him, nothing. White plaster, dry as bone. My mind started running circles already. I left it, moved to another room, and didn't mention it to the clients. But next morning, alone, I picked at the cracked spot again. There it was. Not as much as before, but sure enough, the thin red line emerged right from the same hairline and started trailing. I snapped photos, looked all wrong in them, more brown than red. I thought it had to be a rusty nail melted into the lath, or a dead bat or something leaking God knows what. But thing is, the moment anyone else was in the room, nothing happened. Bri laughed and called it Schrödinger's wall. 3 times that week, I tried again. The same pattern. Alone, chipping plaster, get this sickly, thin ooze that stained my tools and left the room reeking. If I went to fetch someone, it'd vanish almost instantly. Once I left the room when it started, waited outside 5 minutes, came back in, bone dry. Another time, I set up my phone to record, but the angle missed it, and when I tried to check, the screen had this weird crackle distortion. That was probably just my old phone being junky, but it was another thing that gave me a cold feeling standing in that spot, like I was getting away with something forbidden. The manor's owners came by for a walkthrough, and I blurted out the problem because I didn't want to get blamed. The husband looked spooked but interested. They insisted on sending out a guy to test the liquid. He took a sample in those little pharmacy vials. Couple days later, he showed up, looking more confused than worried. He said the test was inconclusive. Not blood, not any known paint, iron, or fungus. Organic, but not, he shrugged. Blamed maybe rodent waste reacting weirdly with old insulation. I wasn't satisfied. I went so far as to cut a big chunk into the plaster, right at that spot, thinking there must be a corroded pipe, or maybe a bird nest oozing God knows what. But behind it was nothing. Just cracked yellow pine studs, dust and matted insulation that crumbled under my gloves. Bone dry. Under my flashlight, it all looked like the inside of a tomb. There aren't any pipes in that wall. It was nowhere near the bathroom or kitchen. I double-checked the blueprints. The wall was a time capsule of dry rot and stale air, so how was anything coming out? For the rest of the job, I made a point never to patch that crack alone. Bri started joking it was my haunted spot, and made this ritual about whistling as we walked past it together, which always made the hair on my arms stand up for reasons I couldn't explain. Some days there'd still be a faint reddish smear on the wall. Other days it dried so completely I wondered if I dreamt it. A couple afternoons I swear I heard scampering somewhere in the walls, but there were no droppings, nothing in traps. Once I worked late, and standing by the bay window, I got this freezing feeling like someone was right behind me. I spun around, nearly lost my balance, but the room was empty. The only person was my own shadow, huge and black on the warped floorboards, stretched twice my size as the sun set behind a broken maple. That's nothing new. Old houses make weird feelings. Still, I left early that day. The night before, I dreamed about peeling back the plaster and seeing a watchful eye behind the crack. So realistic, I woke up gasping, sweat soaking my shirt. Dumb stuff. Stress, probably. The next week, I coaxed the owners into hiring a bigger team. The more people on site, the less weird everything felt. Still, everyone kind of agreed the house never warmed up, never stopped creaking. Nobody else saw the red ooze, though once or twice I caught Bry staring at that bay window patch like it might bite. I finished up the woodwork, ended my portion of the job a smidge ahead of schedule. Couldn't have been happier to walk out that last time. Next team came in and painted over the master bedroom completely. I never heard if new cracks showed up or not. Whole experience made me swear off solo jobs and old houses for good. So yeah, looking back, I keep telling myself it was some weird chemical reaction in the wall. Could have been rust or some rare kind of fungus or something leaching through that science hasn't nailed yet. The owner's test report couldn't pin it down, but maybe their guy was just incompetent. That's what I want to believe anyway. Sometimes, though, on cold winter nights when you catch a metallic scent drifting through the vent, it makes me wonder if you can ever really seal up old walls. Maybe something from way back is still leaking through, waiting to see if you're alone. No clue if any of this checks out with you folks, but I don't go back to that part of Michigan if I can help it. Even now, I avoid old bay windows and never patch cracked plaster, alone, with the door closed behind me. Just in case. Story number 7. Until a few months ago, I thought haunted houses and work-from-home horror stories were just exaggerations. I'm not talking about ghosts in a Victorian mansion or flickering white figures on security cams. I'm talking about real, explainable things that just didn't sit right. If I hadn't experienced it myself, I would have gone on rolling my eyes forever. I work from home, pretty basic IT job. After COVID, I got used to four walls and screens. My flat's small, just a bedroom, kitchen, the living area, and one spare room that I'd set up as my office. I made it cozy, ergonomic chair, a big desk, functional lamp, with a secondhand chunky old printer on the side. I rarely use the printer, but it was there for paperwork, mostly gathering dust. Nights tended to be quiet, with the occasional neighbor's TV or dog barking. The only light after midnight was the blue glow of my monitor, and sometimes headlights through the window. I appreciated the routine, the silence. At least I used to. Everything started with that buzzing sound. Not a constant hum, but sharp, angry, hammering and sudden bursts. First time it happened, I was on a work call, barely paying attention to it, thinking maybe it was some appliance acting up. When the call ended, I went searching for the source. The kitchen, fridge fine. Bathroom, nothing. Bedroom, silent. Finally, I checked my office. The door was closed, which was odd. I usually left it open. Inside was pitch black, even though the bulb was supposed to be always on. The only thing visible was a stuttering little green light coming from the printer. It was blinking, on, off, almost like a heartbeat. I reached for the switch and flicked the lights on. The blinking turned to a physical rumble. The printer whirred, struggled. Paper inched out, but the tray was empty. I thought maybe my phone or laptop had sent something by accident, so I checked. Bluetooth off, printer not connected anywhere. I felt a shot of annoyance. Maybe the thing was just broken. I pulled the plug out of the wall and heard the fade of electricity from the machine. Silence fell. I closed the office and went back to the living room. An hour later, the buzzing returned. Same sound, more insistent. I stopped mid-episode, remote in hand, pulse thumping. I marched back, annoyed now. When I opened the door, I could see faint light flickering under the crack. The printer again. How was it powered? The cord still dangled on the floor, unplugged. I stepped closer and the machine began to grind, gears twitching, sheet of paper emerging with jerking stops. The paper landed on the empty tray, curling as if in pain. I picked it up. On the page in smeared letters, only one word. Leave. Cold sweat broke out on my neck. I tried to rationalize. Maybe it was some glitch, an old document in the printer memory. Maybe a neighbor's device was somehow connecting. In the daylight, it made sense. I replugged the cord, checked every setting, changed the passwords, updated the firmware. But that night, it happened again. Buzz, whir, the churn of paper. this time in bold, stark ink, go. From then, every morning, a new page waited on the tray. Don't stay, get out, not always in the same font. On Wednesday, block capitals. Friday, childish handwriting, slanting awkwardly on the page. Even the paper, sometimes a fresh A4, sometimes one already half-printed on, margins covered in jittery circular doodles. Scanned the flat for cameras or bugs, called the building's handyman. He shrugged, said maybe I need a new printer. I tried not to think about it. I ignored the queue of pages piling up in my trash. Even started unplugging the printer every night, but it didn't matter. Next morning, another note. My sleep started to get weirdly broken, waking up at 3:07 a.m. a few nights, heart hammering, feeling watched. The air in the office always felt heavier, but I told myself it was just paranoia. I tried to justify it all, of course. Bad firmware, electromagnetic interference, maybe even a neighbor hacking my Wi-Fi and pranking me. After all, nobody else seemed bothered. It was just tech acting up, right? But that one night, it got worse. It had been a long day of calls. I'd shut down, barely able to keep my eyes open. Left my laptop on the office desk, printer unplugged, lights off. Walking past the closed office door toward my bedroom, I caught it. That familiar buzz, but louder, almost angry. Like a swarm of hornets stuffed inside a shoebox.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Desperate to get out. I stopped. The air was cooler than before. The hairs stood up along my arms. I turned the handle and opened the door. The printer's status light, usually green, flashed a frantic red, strobe-like. My chest tightened. The printer powered up, somehow, visibly plugged into nothing. The whir was now accompanied by a strange static, like a distant radio stuck between stations. I could almost hear something. Words, maybe, broken by distortion. Paper stuttered out, this time jagged at the end, as if someone had torn it from the machine while it was still printing. My fingers trembled as I grabbed it, three words overlapping, like multiple people shouting into the same void. Look behind you. Suddenly, the overhead light flickered and went out, plunging the room into darkness except for the blood-red glow of the printer's power button. The air changed, suddenly thick and cold, pressing down like a hand on my lungs. I turned, breath hitching. There, by the door frame, something that hadn't been there before. A woman dressed bright red, even in the dark. Posture wrong. Too still. Too close. I couldn't see her face, only a curtain of tangled black hair obscuring it. One hand was held out, beckoning, impossibly long fingers uncurling slow, stiff. The room got colder. A drop that felt unnatural. My throat went tight, breath shallow. It felt like the air itself was being siphoned from my chest, slowly crushing me from the inside. I tried to yell. Nothing came. I remember stumbling, grip gone from my hands. Everything around me started to fade, the buzzing growing louder, skin burning cold around my neck as if invisible claws pressed into it. That's where my memory ends. Morning sunlight woke me on the carpet, still in the office. Mouth dry, body stiff, printer quiet as death. I hauled myself up, noticed it immediately. Ugly, angry bruises ringed around my neck like the prints of hands. I would like to say I packed up my things that minute, but I didn't. I threw out the printer for what it's worth. Called a doctor, who gently suggested sleep apnea, or maybe I'd had some kind of stress-induced episode. Explain the marks as me scratching at my throat in my fitful sleep? Possible, I guess. Still, it's been weeks since then. I work from cafes now, but sometimes at night I swear I hear the faint buzzing, distant. Or just before sleep, I feel the air thicken, chest tighten. Maybe it's just panic. Maybe something else. I wish I could explain it all neatly. Blame it on tech gone wrong or Too much isolation. But some nights when I close my eyes, I see that flash of red, those impossibly long fingers, and I'm not so sure anymore. I keep telling myself it's over, that it was just stress and a busted printer. But if you ever hear that sound, the hum, the buzz, the static in the walls, do yourself a favor. Don't look back.